It's good to see everybody here tonight. Try to talk loud enough. If I start to mumble or put my hand in front of my face, like Jimmy said, just yell at me. We have a lot of new people. Some people haven't been here that often. We studied the book. We have three meetings. We have Saturday morning at 9:15, Sunday at 6, and tonight at 7:30. We're in three different parts of the book. On Saturday, if you're interested, we're covering the third step, and then we're going to go right through steps 4 through 12. And so if you're new, and we're going to cover the how and why of the third step on page 62 this Saturday. Sunday nights, we're finishing working with others. That'll finish the 10th time through those pages. We've been doing this for 10 years. Our 10-year anniversary will be the last Saturday in September. It'll be 10 years when I started this meeting. And tonight, we started the big book over on Wednesday night, and we're doing it for the 10th time. And we are now in Doctor's Opinion. We had a meeting on the cover. We looked at the table of contents. We looked at the forewords, the first edition, and some of the AA history. And for those who don't know, we have a website, experiencethebigbook.org. And all those podcasts, there are about 190 podcasts, I think. And we've covered the whole book. And you might find it helpful. Before I start, I want to just ask God to set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Amen. So now we're getting to the part, these were the first pages in the big book in 1939. And, you know, a lot of people go to treatment and they learn a lot of stuff, and treatment's not good or bad, it is what it is, but I find that a lot of people go to treatment have never read Doctor's Opinion in treatment. And the three pages we're going to cover today really is essential information every alcoholic needs to know. A lot of alcoholics go, and at the treatment they discuss why you're an alcoholic, and you have the groups, and you have insights into all that. That may be great, but this doctor's opinion tells us what our problem is. And he wrote this, and he didn't sign it in the original big book because he wasn't sure what was going to happen if with the public, because the ideas we're going to hear tonight were not accepted at this time. So he wrote this about 1938. The letter that he wrote that we're going to read, he submitted to the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the most prestigious medical journal, and they actually published it as an article in 1940. And then the medical alcoholism is now considered a disease, and so it wasn't considered that in 1939. We were just a bunch of worthless human beings who created a lot of havoc. And that may be true too, but they didn't understand the disease. And he was the one who told Bill W. what his problem was. And then Bill W. heard about the solution from Ebby Thatcher, who got it from Roland Hazard from going to Dr. Young in Switzerland. And then how you got the solution, the steps we got from the Oxford group. And so we're going to read the doctor's opinion. We're just going to cover a few pages. I want to leave some time for discussion. It says the doctor's opinion. So this is his opinion. This is what he thought. And now we accept it. So we could change the title, but we're not going to. They didn't ask me to do that. One of the things is that this was page 1 in the original big book. And so they changed it to XXV or whatever, to Roman numerals, and that's confused a lot of people. But he says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the reader will be interested in, we're the readers, by the way, in the medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in this book. So they're telling you right in the first sentence what the book is all about. It's a plan of recovery. This book is a plan of recovery. Now, why is that good news if you're an alcoholic? Because you don't have a plan that'll work. If you did, you would have done it. And what they're telling you right now, although they don't say it, is you give up on your plan. This is the plan that works. This is a testimony, this book. It's a testament of something that worked. And then, well, I didn't, in the next line, it says, convincing testimony must surely come from medical men who have had experience with the sufferings of our members and have witnessed our return to health. A well-known doctor, this is William Silkworth, chief physician in nationally prominent hospital specializing in alcohol and drug addiction, gave AA this letter. And he worked in the Towns Hospital in New York. He was a neurologist. He lost all of his money in the 1929 stock market. So he went to work for Charlie Towns, and he worked with alcoholics. Can you imagine doing that all day long? And in late night, he says, I've specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years. In late 1934, I attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman, this is Bill W., and his story is the next story in the book, the next chapter, of good earning capacity. He had been, because when he met him, he wasn't earning any money, and he wasn't a competent businessman anymore. Was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless. Now, this is a word that's used in the book quite a bit. The foreword to the first edition, the first thing it says, we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. And he regards it as hopeless, but it's not hopeless anymore. We don't have a hopeless disease, but it's hopeless unless you see that you're hopeless without God. Unless you see that you're hopeless without this plan of recovery on your own, you're not going to make it. In the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. And you're going to read about that. We're going to cover Bill's story next time. I don't know, whenever we finish this chapter. Depends how long I talk. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conception to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. This has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of these men and women, men and their families. They didn't put women because they had their first woman member right before the book was published. And this man over 100 appeared to have recovered. They use this word a lot. Some people think it's controversial. First of all, Bill W. wasn't going to write a book to sell this plan and say we're still recovering, right? So that's one of the reasons he used the word recovered. But recovered meant that they weren't suffering from the disease of alcoholism today. They didn't have the obsession to drink anymore. They were able to have a power in their life so that they could say no to drinking. And so it's a fragile situation. You don't get recovered. You don't go to the doctor, he says you're recovered, you don't need to take the medicine anymore, you're done. That's not what they mean. They mean it's a fragile situation where you're in a spiritual condition where you can say no to alcohol. Anybody think that's a good idea? Well, if everybody thinks that's a good idea, take your big book and go to page, and hold it like this, and go to page 85. Now, is there anybody here who can't hold this up like this? It's too heavy? No. On page 85, it says, we have a new attitude towards alcohol. It comes. It's a miracle. We're not fighting it. We've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. The problem has been removed. Anybody want the problem of alcohol removed? Nobody? Everybody? Good. All you have to do is do everything that it says in here. Now, this is not that much. It's not even that many pages. And if you do everything in here, when you get to page 85, which is the 10th step, you will be recovered. And so I'm encouraging you, I'm kind of a maniac about this, but I'm encouraging you to get into the book if you're new and follow the instructions. And we have plenty of people in this room. She needs a spot. We have women in this room that have studied the book and can help her. I personally know scores of cases who were of the type with whom other methods had failed completely. These facts appear to be of extreme medical importance because of the extraordinary possibilities of rapid growth inherent this group. This may mark a new epoch in the annals of alcoholism. There's not been another epoch past this one. What he means is that they had no hope for people like us. They locked us up. They put us in asylums. And they just locked us up so we wouldn't hurt ourselves. And they had no treatment that was effective. And they have none today. You know why the doctor sent you here? Because they don't have anything that can help you. AA is, Ed's not here, it's the last thing he tried, the first thing that worked, but AA is really, I can't say that you can't recover another way. AA doesn't say that. But if you don't have a plan on how you're going to recover, we suggest you do this, you study the book, you go through it, you work the steps. And here's a powerful line. You may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. And what he's saying is on their testimony. Now, you may not like the big book. You may not like AA. You may not even like me. You might be tired of me already. But here's the deal. It's their experience. This is their experience of what they did and the result. And you don't have to like it or agree with it, but if you want their experience and their result, then you do what they did. And AA doesn't tell you you have to do anything. You can do whatever you want. But they suggest if you run out of options and you do this, tell us the result. We had people tonight who've told us the result, like Casey 9 months ago. And then he's worked the steps and his life has changed. The physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture. Anybody been tortured by alcohol in this room? Anybody tortured for a long time? It's an unending torture. Must believe, now here's that word must again. You must believe that the body of the alcoholic is as abnormal as his mind. So they're telling us right away exactly what's going on. We have an abnormal body and an abnormal mind. Now this line I've read this page a million times. I got something new out of it. It says, it did not satisfy us, these lines, to be told that we could not control our drinking. Now, they were told they couldn't control their drinking just because we were maladjusted to life. Anybody with maladjusted to life here? You could still be. You could be today. I might have been at 10 o'clock, but I'm better now. And that we were in full flight from reality. Well, that's how we look. We look like we're in full flight from reality. You know, the things we do and the behavior and the way we keep doing things, it seems insane to normal people, and we're outright mental defectives. So they're starting out the book and they're not building up our ego, are they? And here's the deal. They were told that they couldn't control their drinking because of these things. These are the things that tell you you need a drink. You see? Anybody have an obsession to drink sober? Anybody? Right. The obsession to drink is because you're maladjusted to life. You're in full flight from reality. You're outright mental defectives. But when they wrote this book, people didn't understand what was wrong with their bodies. They didn't understand. In fact, Bill didn't understand. And you read his story, you think he would have known this. And Dr. Bob didn't understand the problem with his body. And it says, these things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. So we have two issues, our body and our mind. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. If you understand, and we're going to read it tonight, what's wrong with your body, then you won't understand the situation that you're in. You won't see the hopeless condition you're in. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. Now, an allergy is an abnormal reaction to something. And you can have allergies to penicillin, shellfish, peanut butter, all sorts of things. That means that when you're exposed to this, you have an abnormal reaction that's not like everybody else. So we have an allergy to alcohol. Well, somebody said, well, you drank enough of it. How could you be allergic to it? You didn't break out in a rash, did you? No rashes here. Handcuffs. Well, we're gonna see what the allergy is. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But ex-primo drinkers, we could say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. The one thing that they couldn't understand is why, when they drank, they couldn't stop. And they're going to go have one beer at the bar, and then they end up under the bridge. How'd that happen? And you see, they didn't understand. Nobody understood it. We talk about it today. A lot of people in the new meeting know, but some people may not. And it's important for me to remember this. Why? Because it's the first drink that's going to cause me problems. It's not the second drink. It's putting alcohol in my body. Though we work out our solution, the spiritual as well as an altruistic plane. Altruistic means unselfish concern for others. We favor hospitalization for the alcohol who is very jittery or befogged. More often than not, it's imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he's approached. I think some people take longer to clear their brains than others. That's been my observation. As he then has a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. So here's the deal. You have to understand what they're trying to offer you, and then you have to decide if you want to accept this or not. And then here's the doctor's letter. The subject presented in this book seems to be of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. Oh my, addiction's in the big book. I thought we're alcoholics. We're not addicts. People used to argue about that when years ago. They'd throw people out. They'd scream and yell at each other. An addict is a person addicted to a particular substance. Alcoholics are all addicts. We were all addicted to alcohol. Now, I don't know if this is true, but the guy who wrote Acceptance is the Answer, Dr. Paul, said the difference between the alcoholic and the addict is that an addict can't drink and he can't use drugs. And an alcoholic can't use drugs and can't drink. Now, there's a lot of truth to that. Now, there may be people who said they're not addicted to alcohol, but when we read tonight, see if you have the allergy. Because if you have the allergy, then you are an alcoholic. You know, I like this one speaker. He says, what's your drug of choice? You know, people tell you their drug of choice. He says, if you see a pill on the ground, are you going to ask what it is if you're an alcoholic? It's whatever you get your hands on, right? And I've seen so many people can't get their drug, but then they'll turn the alcohol. And then when they turn the alcohol, they turn back to the drug. Or people who are alcoholics get on drugs, and then they find that they get back to alcohol. So we have to be very careful. For me, it's very simple. Anything that will change how I see the world, make it different, is dangerous for me. Tylenol doesn't do that. But I still take two, of course, because I'm an alcoholic. But you see, there are a lot of things don't do that to me, and they're safe for me. But if I take anything that changes the way I see the world, makes me feel, it's very dangerous, because I know I want a second one. I say this after many years' experience, and that never goes away. You have that forever. So the key is not to do any of that, not to take it. And that's what the steps are about. He talks about he's one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcohol and drug addiction. There was therefore a sense of real satisfaction when I was asked to contribute a few words on the subject, which is covered in such masterly detail in these pages. We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics. Well, gee, what the hell does that mean? Moral psychology. Well, it's a belief in a power greater than yourself. I looked it up. I'd read this book for years, so I decided maybe I'd look it up. And it's a belief in a power greater than yourselves. It's a change. It's changing the way you see the solution. But its application presented difficulties beyond our conception because they didn't know how to do that, how to get that accomplished. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. Now, synthetic knowledge means it's true by relating to the world. That means that the knowledge that they had relating to the world and the body and their science, that wasn't going to be a solution for us. We had to have the powers of good that lie outside that. And he's talking about God. Many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under our care, the hospital where I acquired some ideas which he had put into practical application at once. Later, he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell a story. This is Bill W. Immediately, when he got out of the hospital, started working with others. It says, the unselfishness of these men, as we have come to know them, the entire absence of profit motive, and their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one who has labored long and wearily in this field. And I think you can feel that tonight in the room. You know, we don't have any selfish motives here. We're not interested in profit. We're just here in helping each other. They believe in themselves. This is a great line. But still more. See, just believing in myself got me here, right? So I have to believe in myself, but still more in the power, capital P, which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. Anybody here been pulled back from the gates of death? I was. And I didn't do it. It wasn't me. It was God. Of course, an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor, and this often requires a definite hospital procedure before psychological measures can be of maximum benefit. And that's because we can get DTs and we can die from DTs. Drug addicts who withdraw from like morphine and heroin, all that, they just want to die, but they don't die. It's not fatal. You just feel terrible. But alcoholics can die from DTs. We can go in the seizures, and we can get convulsions, and we can get our hearts can stop. It's very serious business. That's why they're usually hospitalized and detoxed. Now here's the key line. I think we're just gonna cover this one paragraph. It says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, and he's the first one to say this, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. That the phenomenon of craving, that's what we call the allergy to alcohol, the phenomenon of craving. Now, if you're new, you're here, a lot of people say, well, I've been craving a drink. You don't crave a drink if you're sober. Craving only occurs after alcohol is in your body. It's an abnormal reaction. Alcohol comes in our body, and we immediately want a second one. Now, most of us know that. So when people relapse, they don't go to the store and get like one of those little bottles of booze, you know, or they don't get one beer, right? Because we know what's going to happen. And so it's the phenomenon of craving. And here's the deal. It's limited to alcoholics. It never occurs in average temperate drinker. We don't stir our drinks. We don't do this on the airplanes, you know. We drink it, and we don't play around here. And normal people don't do that. Have you ever been to a place out to dinner with people and they leave wine? You know, they don't drink all the wine, you know, or they don't drink all of their drink, and they don't have what we have. And they'll wave their hand over it. We don't do that. Anybody here wave their hand over there? No, I've had enough. Yeah, there's never enough. Remember the warning label. There's a warning label on every bottle of booze. Did you know what it says? It says, this bottle will run out. It's a big warning. Yeah, some people just got it. The phenomenon of a craving is limited and never occurs. Now, that's so important to know. You can't make someone an alcoholic. You can't make them develop the phenomenon of craving. Now, here's the bad thing. If you have it, you can't get rid of it. You can have triggers. You can eat the big book. You're not going to change your body. You cannot change your body. You've got it. So everybody in this room has the phenomenon of craving. You all said you're alcoholics. And it says these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having they lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Now, what he's saying here is that I can't take one drink. I cannot do it successfully. Now, I might be able to take one drink tonight and stop, and then the next day I'll say, you know, I was able to stop. I could have one, and then I'm off and running. So if any of you listen to Father Leo, he talks about how he had been sober for 9 months. He's a great speaker. And he went to this gathering, and the lady says, well, Father Leo, you're not having your gin and tonic. He says, well, he had stopped drinking because the bishop told him he better quit or he's in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So he says, no, I can't drink it. But she says, oh, just one, Father Leo. Just have one. So he has one drink. And he goes home, and then he says, the lion started to wake up inside of him. And he went back. He had to go back to the bar because this is really clever. He left his wallet there, or his watch there. He's an alcoholic. And he went back there, and he says the lion was alive, and he got drunk. And he ended up driving his car, and he hit a tree, and in front of three of his parishioners. And then when he hit the tree, he realized his hopeless condition. He had admitted complete defeat. He could see his life. He could see that he had no power over alcohol. And then he was able to work the steps, and he's a fantastic speaker. So we cannot put alcohol in our body. Now, once we once we form the habit and we can't break it, so we keep drinking, right? So we wake up in the morning, we're not going to drink. Anybody do that? Solemn oath. You hide the car keys, you hide your wallet, you have a whole plan, you've written it all out, and then you're drunk at 12. What happened? Well, we can't say no to the first drink, right? And since we can't say no to the first drink, we're in trouble, because once we put it in our body, we're doomed. So the solution to alcohol, to having the allergy to alcohol, is simply don't do it, don't drink it. Now, I had a lot of patients who had a lot of allergies. I never saw them come and beg me to get another one of that drug. You know, they'd stop breathing and their eyes would roll back. They didn't come by and say, "That was great, doctor. Give me another one. Give me another shot of that." But we do it time and time again. Now, if our problem is that we can't take the first drink, then the solution is not the drink. Does everybody agree to that? So all we have to do is hold hands, sing Kumbaya, and we're never going to drink again. Now, why won't that work? Because we have something wrong with our mind. And our mind tells us that we're going to have a drink. Now, I'm going to go so I can finish up, and then I'll review this next week. We go down to the bottom. This next paragraph is really powerful, and they tie together. It says, so if you have the allergy to the alcohol, now here's our real problem. Men and women drink, everybody see where I am? XXVII. Men and women drink. It would be good to almost have these two paragraphs memorized so you could remember them. All alcoholics. It's drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Did anybody used to like the effect of alcohol? Yeah, it changed reality. It made the world better. Anybody hear the promises at the meeting? They're read, the 9-step promises, anybody like them? That's what alcohol did for us. It gave us peace, it gave us serenity. We lost fear. We found we could be useful. You see, alcohol is very powerful, and our mind learned that. So what happens to alcoholics is our mind is damaged when it comes to alcohol. So something will happen, and my mind will say, I need a drink, and I can't say no to it. There's an area here that I can't say no to that. And it says the sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, because when they drink, they have the phenomena of craving, they can't time differentiate the truth from the false. That's a powerful line. We can't see the truth about our situation. It says to them their alcoholic life seems normal. I mean, it's normal. You wake up, you're not going to drink, you have a bad day, your mind tells you to drink, you get a drink, right? Now, you did that for a long time, but then at some point in the alcoholic's life, their life becomes unmanageable because of their drinking. Now, we drink because our life's unmanageable sober, but after we drink, we have unmanageable life because of our drinking. And that's where people get confused. They think their life's unmanageable because it's a mess when they drink. Well, that's true. But if your solution is not the drink, why do you ever drink? Because your life's unmanageable sober because you're running it. Now, they don't tell us that till page 62, which we're going to cover Saturday. But they're telling us that our mind cannot see the truth about alcohol. And it says they're restless, irritable, and disconnected, discontented. Discontent means you're not happy with the way things are. Anybody here ever get irritable? Now, irritable for us is pissed off. And restless means we're impatient, intolerant, and we're just really out of it. And so we have a mental addiction and a physical addiction. Our mind is addicted to alcohol. Now, what happened to me, I don't know about you, is that my mind learned that if I didn't feel okay inside, alcohol would fix that. Now, and then therefore, when I would have a problem or something would come up, it could even be a great day, my mind would say, you need a drink or you deserve a drink. And then once it tells me that, I can't say no to that. Anybody else have that? Now, if I knew it was going to kill me and I knew I shouldn't take the first drink, why would I allow myself to have a drink? Because I'm insane. It's insane. And we don't have sanity to alcohol. I hope I'm helping somebody in the room. We're not able to see the truth about alcohol before we drink it. Now, we can see the truth about it at 8 in the morning, but when we head to the liquor store, we stop seeing the truth. Now, what happens when we head to the liquor store? Our mind is our will, right? And we're thinking. And we decided we're not going to drink. We made a decision not to drink. Anybody ever do that? But yet we're in the liquor store because willpower won't work. My will, my mind can't say no to alcohol when I get the, when my mind tells me I need a drink. Nothing can come between an alcoholic and the drink. Have anybody ever experienced that? Don't get between somebody and their drink. And so we're powerless. I cannot ever stop my mind from the obsession to drink when my mind gets it. So how come there are people sober here? Because God gives us the ability to see the truth about alcohol. And you get that on page 85. So now if I think about alcohol, I'll say, bad idea. Because God will show me the truth. Now, if I get away from God and I get back into me and run the world, then I'll drink again. We're never cured of alcoholism. We have a daily reprieve from our drinking. So it says they're restless, irritable, discontented. Unless they can experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks which they see others taking with impunity. So you don't go get a drink and say, you know, I'm restless, irritable, discontented. I'm full of self-centeredness and self-pity. I've been running the world. I've been playing God. I'm full of fear and full of anger. I need a drink. We don't do that. We just, our emotions tell us we need something and we immediately react to that. Now to break that cycle is very hard. We're all here tonight because we were given a gift. Everybody here had that one moment when they could see that they couldn't fix this anymore. And they said, I need help, and they're here today. And then we'll just read, after they have succumbed to the desire again, succumb means to die to the desire, as may do, then the craving develops, and then we're screwed. And then you have a spree. And then you emerge remorseful. Anybody emerge remorseful the next day? Anybody take a solemn oath? He says, a firm resolution not to drink again. Now, this guy was not an alcoholic. Do you think he understood us? He was a brilliant man. A firm resolution, not just a resolution, a firm one, but it's repeated over and over. And unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. And the psychic change is a change in our personality, a change in our relationship with God and the world. And then we have a power so we don't have to drink. I'm sorry I talked a little bit long tonight, but I wanted to finish the thoughts on this. And we'll open it up, and then next week we'll pick up again on this chapter. Thank you.